As the fall season kicks in, we go from the links, the rinks, and back in the newest Musings on Golf. On behalf of our executive producer, Jenna Self, I am Kelly Elbin, welcoming you to a hockey-themed episode in which we welcome Stanley Cup champion TJ Oshie to our show. TJ played 16 years in the National Hockey League until his retirement earlier this year. And in fact, tonight, October 7th, 2025, the National Hockey League opens a new season. You'll hear TJ talk about his passion for the game of golf, certainly his love of hockey, and new opportunities for him behind the mic. There's a lot to the TJ Oshie story. You are really going to enjoy hearing from him. When we come back from that interview, we're going to talk about Bob McIntyre taking no time at all in winning the Dunhill Links over in Scotland 1 week after he was a big part of the European team winning the Ryder Cup. I've got a number of thoughts about the fallout. There's no other way to put it in terms of the PGA of America and the Ryder Cup, and some thoughts on perhaps a captain or a couple of thoughts at least for a captain for the U.S. for 2027 in Ireland. If you look at hockey and golf, just the very nature of a player firing a slap shot and the swing of a golf club, there's a lot in common there. So it's not surprising at all that Wayne Gretzky, Mario Lemieux, Grant Fuhrer, Brett Hull, Sidney Crosby, great legendary hockey players, have also been really good golfers. In fact, TJ Oshie, who we're interviewing today, played in his 10th American Century Celebrity Golf Championship over the summer. And TJ is a good player, but Joe Pavelski, who played about 18 years with the San Jose Sharks and the Dallas Stars in the National Hockey League, Joe Pavelski won the American Century Championship. So there's a lot of lineage there in terms of and connection between hockey and golf. And TJ has a lot of funny stories, quite honestly, about his initial interest in golf and then how rabid he became. I have to tell you, folks, I am a very passionate, long time fan of the Washington Capitals. And when the Washington Capitals won the Stanley Cup in 2018, it was, I was over the moon. And I got to thinking as the NHL season was approaching, I got to thinking about TJ Oshie and reached out to the PR guy for the Washington Capitals, who then got in touch with TJ, and TJ couldn't have been nicer. I'm not sure you find a nicer hockey player, quite honestly, and classier than TJ Oshie. The layers to his story include major back issues that really forced TJ to retire a year or two before I think he really wanted to. It hasn't really affected his golf game, but it certainly affected him as a hockey player. He missed a lot of games and finally retired over the summer. And then after living in the D.C. area and playing for the Washington Capitals for many years, he moved back to his family back to his native Minnesota. But the story also and the very touching human interest story for TJ Oshie revolves around his dad, Tim, who had early onset Alzheimer's. And when the Caps won the Stanley Cup in 18 and finished off the winning game out in Las Vegas, when they beat the Vegas Golden Knights, Tim, his dad, who they affectionately referred to as Coach, was on the ice, and TJ was asked about it, got very emotional. And it meant so much to him to have his dad there. His dad knew what was going on. He knew that his son had been part of a team that won the Stanley Cup, which when it gets to hockey, there's nothing bigger. And recently, the last couple of years, a coach passed away. And TJ's just really upfront with a lot of thoughts about his dad and what he meant to him. So you're going to really enjoy this. So much fun talking to TJ. And one other thing, if you know nothing else about TJ Oshie, if you're a fan of the Olympics, you'll likely remember in 2014 at the Sochi Olympics in Russia, it was TJ Oshie who made 4 of 6 penalty shots to catapult the U.S. to a victory over Russia and get them into the quarterfinals of that Olympics. TJ was just a masterful effort when it came to stick handling and being able to come through in the clutch. TJ Oshie, a different phase of his life right now. He talks about that. So much to come from this interview with TJ Oshie right after you hear from our good friends, our corporate partners at William & Harry and Titleist. America, this is your moment. William & Harry's limited edition spirit shoe is here to honor the Ryder Cup so every fan can feel like part of Team USA from the first tee to the final putt. Two head-turning designs, premium deerskin, 100% water-resistant with spikeless grip and all-day comfort. Just so you know, there's a limited run on these shoes, so don't sit this one out. Pre-buy now at williamandharry.com. Get into spirit, get into comfort.
Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X are the best performing, most consistent in the game. So how does the best get better? You start by listening to the best players in the world. You experiment, iterate, validate. You trust the best process to create the best golf ball the game has ever known. The all-new Pro V1 and Pro V1X. More speed off the tee, more control with your irons, more spin with the wedges, and more opportunity to shoot your lowest score.
National Hockey League drops the puck on the 2025-26 season tonight, October 7th, and our special guest certainly knows all about NHL opening nights. For 16 seasons, he skated at the highest level, capping off a fabulous career as a member of the Stanley Cup champion Washington Capitals in 2018. He's also a passionate golfer, having competed this summer in the American Century Celebrity Golf Championship in Lake Tahoe. He's been there for many years, by the way. So from the ice to the links, so much to talk about with TJ Oshie here on Musings on Golf. Osh, how are you, man?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks. I mentioned about the American Century Celebrity Golf Championship, and John Miller, who started the event, is a member of the same club I am here in Palm Beach Gardens, and I've gotten to know John Welly is a really neat guy. And TJ, the event itself, you've played in it, what, I think more than 10 years. What makes the event for you and for all the athletes, whether former players or celebrities, so special?
Honestly, there's so many things. I think first and foremost, everyone that goes there is either a golf fan or just loves playing the game of golf. And so when you kind of watch, you know, the guys on the PGA and finally you get a chance to be inside the ropes, it's like, to me, it feels like my Stanley Cup final or like the Super Bowl of golf for, you know, just us average Joes out there. I guess a couple guys are pretty good. So on the surface, for me personally, it feels like this is the Masters. Like this is my Masters. I mean, I call it a Tahoe cut because the whole course, you kind of, if you're a righty, you kind of got to play a cut. So I force myself all year, no matter what, even if I should try to draw the ball, I still hit a cut just to prepare for being at the American Century Championship. So that's on the surface. And for me personally, like when you get there and you're inside the ropes, American Century does, you know, so much and give so much back to charities. And I like to think that I'm a charitable person. And so when you see how, like the actual dollar amount, I don't know what it is, but it's insane. The actual amount of money that they give back is, it's special to just kind of be a part of that. Obviously we're just there playing golf and, you know, trying to interact with fans, make sure everyone has a good time, interact with, you know, all the people that volunteer on all the tee boxes and all that stuff. And so there's obviously the charity part of it. You're on TV, that brings, you know, a new set of nerves. You know, I could do the shootout in the Olympics and I mean, it felt like just like I was tying my shoes, but I get on the first tee at the American Century Championship and all of a sudden I feel like I think I blink when I'm about to hit the ball because I don't know what's going on. I can't feel my hands. And then now that I've been here, I've been at the American Century Championship for gosh, I think last year is my 10th year. Yeah. Now I've made friends with a lot of the, you know, celebrities, and I don't see myself as a celebrity, but I definitely see a lot of those guys as celebrities. And so we kind of have this bond of every year you get back and you get to hang with the boys and the ladies and, you know, bring your wives along. And I bring my kids every year. And it's just such a special, special tournament that American Century and John Miller and NBC puts on. It's so much fun.
Yeah. And I've heard, you know, a lot of people mention what you said about the nerves, that when you go outside of the sport, you know, right? It's a very different set of things that are going through your head that simply do not happen when you, in your case, step on the ice, right?
No, I mean, not even close. I've had games where my family is sat on the glass and I won't see them the whole game because I'm focused, everything else, like I don't hear crowd chants. You're just focused and I know what I'm doing. I prepared for it my whole life. And then you get, you know, maybe a little outside of the ropes and the patrons are, you know, standing like you're Rory McIlroy thinking you can hit through this chute. And you're just like, guys, please back way up. Like, I know where I want this to go, but I don't know if it's going to go there. And so it's amazing when you get in that environment. Obviously, a lot of the athletes in the tournament are Hall of Famers, you know, some, you know, the greatest of their sports. But you get on the golf course and you get people watching, you get some cameras up there. I always like when I walk up because I'm usually not in like the prime time tee times, and you see a camera and it's just tilted down because no one's up in the tower. You're like, yes, all right, I got this, we're good. So it really is. It's crazy how much your nerves can get to you in a game where you're not fully prepared for every shot. I feel like I changed my swing. Sometimes I swing just to try to make my swing look good and not really, you know, because there's so many people watching, like, oh, you know, I gotta look like Rory here. Drop it in the, no, I can't do that. So it's a special time. Honestly, it's our family. And if you ask my kids what like our family tradition is, it's going to the American Century Championship and having a week down there.
Oh, that's terrific. I mentioned to you before we came on that I grew up in the D.C. area, big time Caps fan, and how much it meant to me just as a fan from a distance. What was it like? I want to ask you about your retirement, but I have to ask you about that night in Las Vegas after all those years of playing when you won. If you would talk about the emotions of that night of winning the Stanley Cup, raising that, and then the story, please. The side story, but a big one about your late father who suffered from Alzheimer's disease, Coach Tim, and what that meant to you to have him there on the ice with you.
Yeah, well, so when we won in 2018, it was my third season with the Caps. And I came from St. Louis, love St. Louis, love the St. Louis fans, love my teammates, the organization. But when I got to D.C., the Capitals organization, they kind of just, they made me feel so welcome, like I belong there, like I was a very important piece to what they were trying to build. And so when we won, that emotion of, you know, the 2 years before losing to Pittsburgh and them going on to win the Stanley Cup and playing them in the regular season, we're like, God, like that should be us. That, why isn't that us? Why can't we get there? And every step of the way in 2018 Stanley Cups, like every series, we kind of found like a little bit more of a piece of what had been missing, and just the conviction and just sheer effort and sacrifice it takes for every guy in the lineup, not just Ovi doing Ovi things or Nick Backstrom being the best passer I've ever seen in my life, like, or Braden Holtby being unbelievable in that. We needed every little piece. And we got more and more confidence. And so when we when the buzzer went off and we won, it was, we almost had so much, I don't really know the exact feeling. Like, there's just so much emotion that comes out of you that you finally did it. You got over the hump. You did what everyone thought, our window was closed and Obi was apparently getting old back then. You know, we kind of took everything that people were saying about the Washington Capitals and we just stuck together and got it done. And, gosh, there's so many different emotions that you go through in that moment where you're, you know, you dream, even as a kid, when you're able to win a championship, you throw your helmet off, throw your gloves in the air. That's something that no other sport does. You know what I mean? Like, you don't, basketball players don't have things to throw in the air. You know, it's like, it's, that's a, you think of the 1980 Miracle on Ice team. Like, what you see is all the gear flying all over the place. And so when you're able to do that, it's a really special thing. And then obviously I transferred into getting asked about my dad from Jeremy Roenick. Not even asked about my dad. I think the question was along the lines of, is there anyone here, you know, that you're excited to celebrate this with? And immediately,
that's right.
Yeah. He was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. I believe he was just before his 49th birthday. You know, very aggressive familial Alzheimer's. You know, at this time now, he was not really traveling very well. He still remembered everyone, but not for too much longer after. And so I just immediately thought about my dad and all the times that we were in the driveway pretending we win the Stanley Cup. And as I said, I was already filled with like an insane amount of emotion. Yeah. And then they asked that question and it was hard to get out. It was definitely not I definitely didn't plan on mentioning my dad, and I wasn't trying to raise awareness for Alzheimer's, but it did. And a lot of people reached out to me, and maybe almost as many people that reached out saying congratulations for the Stanley Cup, like even people from other teams, they reached out, and now you realize how many people and families are affected by loved ones with Alzheimer's. And so I'm glad that, you know, they got to hear my story and know that they're not alone and that it's hard to go through. But that's kind of how the emotions came out and how I mentioned my dad. And then we obviously had a big hug after and lifted the cup together and had a great celebration. So like I mentioned, he was starting to forget things at that time, not necessarily people yet, or at least not his close loved ones yet, but he was forgetting kind of what he did the day before and where he was going, if he was walking to somewhere. So someone always had to be there at his side to, you know, grab his arm. So he knew that he wasn't lost. And he woke up the next morning and in the hotel and looked over at his sister, my aunt, who took care of him, for the later years of his life. And right away in the morning said, "We got the cup." And she was like, "Oh, he hasn't woken up, you know, and remembered the day before in a very long time." So that was a core memory that stuck with him. So it was super special.
That's a very sweet story. I know you grew up in Minnesota, and after your retirement from the Capitals in June, you and your family have moved back to Minnesota. I wonder, interested, and I know, you know, the Brainerd Lakes region, and you have so many good golf courses in the state. Why did you start playing golf? When did you start playing, and what got you interested in the sport? Why golf?
I wasn't the best student in school. I learned once I got to high school, I had a very great coach that by the end of my high school career got my grades up to, you know, in the mid threes, or above 3.0 anyways. But going into it, I was not a great student. I didn't love it. So my sophomore year, from Waro, a super small town, hockey town, USA, half the team splits, half go to baseball in the spring and half go to golf. And I just simply asked, you know, my teammates, which one gets out of school more, because I played all sports growing up, and we're on the Canadian border. If you think like Minnesota, the very, very northern tip, like that's where Warroad is. And so to go to golf courses and you know, the end of March, you got to drive south. So you miss a lot of school. And they're like, golf. If you want to miss school, you got to play golf. And so I was like, all right, I guess I'm a golfer. So my first day on a real golf course, not just going to the range with my dad or something, was the first day of golf practice. And then I just started falling in love from there. And now I'm absolutely hooked.
I know you, and you've been hooked for a while. What was it at the start? What, in addition to being able to maybe spend a little more time away from school, if you will, what was it about the game itself, about golf, that hooked you right away?
I think because I was such an athletic kid and I played every sport under the sun that was available to me. And I always kind of had a knack for picking things up pretty quickly. And golf was one that I just couldn't understand at a young age how you could hit such a good shot and then the next one hit a terrible shot. And it was almost like this, I wrestled in my mind with like, you have to, you know, I'm not trying to pump my own tires, but like, you're pretty good at all the other sports. You have to get better at this sport. And it was just so hard to get good. And that's what I still wrestle with today. I got four kids now, so I don't golf nearly as much as I would like. I'm happily at home and spend time with them. But even to this day, it's just like a wrestle trying to make something perfect that is just impossible. It's an imperfect game. It's just never going to be perfect. But I think chasing that, especially as like an athlete that played in the NHL a long time, and every year you think like, this is going to be my best year, whether it's your 16th year or your rookie year, you're like, in your mind, when you step into training camp, I'm going to be the best player on the team. I'm going to score 50 goals, you know, which is unrealistic for the amount of goals that I scored. But in my mind, that's what was going to happen. And every time I get to a golf course, I'm going to shoot like 3 under par in my mind. Sometimes I even tell the caddy, and then I, you know, blow up an 82 or something. But it's still just that chase of constantly trying to be perfect in a game where that's just not possible.
No, I completely understand. I think everybody listening to this can completely relate to what you're talking about. So pleased to be joined by the great TJ Oshie, who recently retired after 16 outstanding seasons in the National Hockey League. Let me ask you sort of a 40,000 foot question about hockey and golf. I mean, you had so many good, great hockey players, whether it's Wayne Gretzky or Mario Lemieux, Bobby Orr, et cetera. Recently, I mean, Joe Pavelski, for example, this year, Joe played for San Jose and Dallas. He won the American Century Championship. Is there simply a natural correlation between shooting the puck, that motion, and swinging a golf club? Is that part of why you have so many good hockey players who are good golfers?
Yeah, I think the timing is part of it. The motion is similar, although there's a lot of left-handed hockey players who play right-handed golf, and that just absolutely blows my mind that's even possible. But I think it's the motion, and I actually would think hockey players would be better at golf than they are. Granted, a lot of hockey players are good at golf, but like we're shooting a puck that's not standing still, right? And so you got to think, if there's someone's passing your puck at like 30 miles an hour and you're one timing it and picking a corner, you know, 25 feet this way that you're not even looking at, that a ball just sitting there by itself not moving, you should be able to hit that pretty well. I think it's probably a little bit of the timing. You know, with hockey players, we have a lot of different shots that we have to shoot in a lot of different positions. In golf, you have to be able to hit a lot of different shot shapes.
Yeah.
If you want to, you know, if you want to be good, and you have to use a little bit of that imagination on how you're going to, I guess for golf, it'd be how you're going to spin the ball. But for hockey, it's how you're going to flex your stick. If you want it to go high or low, if you're going to cup, you know, close your hands a little bit, if you're going to open up, if you got to get the puck up fast. So a lot of those mental kind of cues as you're going through a swing, we have to do that at, you know, just as fast as speed when we're on the ice, while also worrying about getting hit. So I think mentally our minds are kind of already accustomed to, you know, not every swing pass can be perfect, and sometimes you got to save it one way or another. And that's the same for hockey. When you're going to take a shot, you know, the puck might tip a stick a little bit and you have to adjust slightly to get the one timer off. Our brains are already kind of trained to think that quick. And so I think that's kind of part of why hockey players tend to be able to get around on the course. Not saying our swings are perfect, but I think that's why we can control the ball a little bit and find ways to score.
Yeah, that makes sense. I read that during your years in the NHL, playing golf in the off season almost bordered on obsession for you. And obviously you mentioned with having four kids, it's a different phase of your life right now. But during those years, I mean, how many rounds of golf would you play in the summer? And did you go back to Minnesota and play? Where'd you play?
Yeah, so typically I was in, you mentioned the Brainerd Lakes area. Typically I would train there at Minnesota hockey camps. And before I met my now wife, we would train at 6 a.m., try to get out of there. Before, we were skating a lot in like the August months, but try to get out of there by 9:30. We would go home. My house, I was living with my college buddies. Some guys were still in college. Some guys had, you know, went in the minors or were pro. And we'd be to the course by 10:15, and we wouldn't leave until you couldn't see your ball anymore. So, I mean, if I had to guess, is probably 9-10 rounds a week, I'd say, in my golfing prime. I mean,
what'd you get your handicap? What'd you get your index down to? What's the lowest you've been, by the way?
I think the lowest I've ever been is like a 0.2.
Wow. What are you right now? If we look you up on the USGA gen, what would you be? Or what are you?
I think I'm stuck at a 3. So I just, it doesn't go up much from there, and it doesn't come down much. I just don't play enough golf for it to move around very, very often. And honestly, I don't know why, but I feel like as the season goes, I get worse and worse at golf. And like my first couple rounds, I'll shoot in like the low mid 70s. I'm like, oh, this is my year. And then I'll get in my head and think I'm better than I am. And then I'll hover around the 80s.
Now, the average PGA Tour player is driving the ball upwards of, you know, 320, 330 yards. It's incredible. But TJ Oshie, I read, please verify, at the 2021 American Century, it's my understanding Patrick Mahomes had the lead in the long drive contest at some point, and then you hit a drive of 369 yards. Is this correct?
Yeah. So technically he won still, because it was my second ball. My first one, I think I faded out 340 or something. I don't know if they take into account being in Lake Tahoe, if it has anything. I know it, you know, I'm not sure what exactly it was, but
right.
Yeah, the second one, I definitely got a hold of that one. I can't swing like that anymore because of my back, but I used to probably average, you know, just over 300. If I'm just trying to swing kind of my normal swing, I'd say I probably dropped off to 290-ish on average now. So trying to slow the swing down a little bit.
Do you have a golf professional who you work with, or are you kind of PJ Oshie trained?
I had my first lesson of my life last Wednesday. And I played around on Thursday, and it did not go well. I'm gonna try to get into it a little bit. I was a nut for Michael Breed's show on the Golf Channel in my younger years, where I would literally do, and he has like that, you know, that bag of like different things. You'd have like a hockey stick in there and a bat and like all these things that you can do at home. And I would literally use that show and try and like go through. There was an app at one point. I'm not sure if there still is, but there was like hundreds of videos on there. And I would just kind of go through and learn, you know, some of how it works. My swing's definitely not picturesque, or, you know, hockey players typically have tight hips, so we can't get back there too far. But I'm gonna try to get into a little bit. Like you mentioned, Pav won the American Century this year, and yeah. I was in the lead after day one, gosh, 2020, 2, maybe.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yep.
And I was coming off a hernia surgery where I ripped my ab off of my pelvic bone. And so I hadn't golfed yet that year. So that was, I played in one scramble the day before, and that was my first like round of the year. And so, like I mentioned, when I don't get in my own head, I can play pretty well. But yeah, I don't know. I'd love to contend at American Century. Honestly, I think the Caps my last year had like a bucket list thing, and winning the American Century Championship is like number one on my bucket list. I don't know if it'll ever happen because a lot of those guys are they're so good. Pav is so good. But I'd love to try to catch them.
Hey, you actually talked, though, because of the chronic back issues that you had, you actually put golf aside a little bit in hoping to extend your career. Talk a little bit about those chronic issues, how long they lasted. And also, TJ, do the back issues, do they not affect you at all playing golf as opposed to playing hockey?
Yeah. No, they don't, especially now. I'll work backwards. I got stem cell injections in 5 discs in January of this year. And I'm doing a lot better now. Not good enough to be an NHL player or to be able to train hard enough to get back into shape to play hockey. But I'm just good enough to be just like, you know, your average Joe playing golf. And I'm trying to, it was probably the last 2.5 years of my career. My back started getting bad, and you know, we thought it was one thing kind of the whole time, when it ended up being something completely different. And so my last season, I had kind of the 1,000 game mark was a possibility my last two seasons. And my second to last season playing, I'd play 2 games and then I'd be out for 5 games, and I'd be in for 2 games and be out for 5 games. And I was just trying to play as many games as I could so that I could try to get to that 1,000 game mark. It was basically the only goal I had set for myself in my career. It wasn't like a certain amount of goals or assists. I just wanted to play 1,000 games. I respected the guys that did that. And so we got to my, you know, I pieced together somewhat of a season. I don't even know if I played half the games my second to last year. And then going into what I felt like, because of my back, could be my last season, even though I had 2 years left on my deal. I had just decided I'm not going to play golf in the season, which is, I mean, we would only play maybe 4 rounds a year. So I'm just sacrificing 4 rounds of golf, which isn't that big of a deal, really. Except for when you get to LA and the boys are going to play some golf and you got to sit in a hotel, which I had never done in my whole career. But, and so I decided to put it away and found a kind of a recipe of how I could get in and play and be healthy and have my back be good enough to get to 1,000 games. And I started out really well. And after a couple months, I got hit actually in the head. Might have gotten knocked out a little bit, not for a couple seconds. And then after that, my back was just in a tough shape the rest of the year. But I ended up getting to 1,000 games. But now golf doesn't bother my back at all. I could play, you know, 3-4 rounds a week, which would be impossible with the kids, but, no, my back's good enough to golf, which is great. It's really all I wanted to get to when I retired, was to be able to play with my kids in the driveway, or, you know, play soccer, shoot some hoops, go on the ice with them, or, and definitely play golf for as long as possible.
Spend a lot of time like your dad spent with you, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Final few questions for TJ Oshie here on Musings on Golf. Okay, so you officially retired in June, but you do have a new role with the Washington Capitals, and it sounds like the television broadcasting is a career you're pointing to. If you could speak maybe for a second about what you're going to be doing with Monumental Sports and what your goals are for TV.
Yeah, I'm trying it out on a smaller scale this year. Like I mentioned before, the Capitals organization is so important to me and so close to me that I always want to be aligned with them one way or another. And so I would love to be a coach, you know, when my kids are maybe a little older. But that just wasn't in the cards for me right now. With, I mean, those guys work way harder than the players do. They're at the rink a lot longer than we are. And I just wasn't willing to sacrifice that time away from my wife and kids. So the next closest thing was to go on the broadcast. And I think I'll be doing around 10 games or so in an analyst type position, pre and post game. And working with them as well on the corporate side, in a kind of a part-time role. So, I'm trending towards doing a little bit more broadcasting. I think it's super fun. It's a way to stay involved with the game without, you know, really committing an insane amount of time to it. I'm gonna have to watch a little bit more hockey than I'm used to, but and pay attention a little bit more. But besides that, just want to stay involved in the game of hockey, a game that gave so much to me, and hopefully I can go on the broadcast and kind of invite the fans a little bit into how I see the game and maybe break down some situations from a player that didn't retire, you know, that just retired, that still knows a lot of the guy that's on the ice and has played against a lot of them, and help the fans kind of see the game through my eyes a little bit.
TJ, two final questions, one hockey related, and then one is a kind of a personal question I ask at the end of each of these podcasts. First of all, on the hockey side, as we mentioned, NHL, first faceoff tonight, October 7th. You've got with the two-time Stanley Cup champion Florida Panthers, a team that really looks to be built to continue to be, you know, a major threat. How do you see the Panthers, I would imagine, for you have to be right up there as a major contender? Can you give me a sense of other teams that you might see as you know, threats to win the cup in this coming season?
Yeah, it doesn't feel to me at this point that there's too much turnover. I think it's going to be somewhat similar to how things shook out last year. I think McDavid is probably at the point now where he's got to win, right? That's kind of, you know, you think of, and don't get me wrong, he is, in my opinion, he's the best player that I've ever played against as far as someone that you have to defend. I mean, it just feels, when you're on the ice with him, it just feels like it's impossible for someone to be able to move that fast and stick handle that fast with their brain being able to keep up with them. And so, I imagine he's going to be right there at the end. He's just such a dynamic player. I don't want to be too much of a homer, but the Capitals had a great season last year, and not doing a lot of turnover. I mean, they basically have almost the same team. And I watched these guys last year, how they bonded off the ice. I was, you know, under contract. I wasn't with the team every day, but I was in the group chat, right? I think I might have just got kicked out just very, very recently. And so, or I'm still in the old group chat, but I'm sure they started a new one without me and Backy in it. But the way that they bonded as a team reminds me a lot of, you know, the 15, 16, 17 Capitals that I was on. And I just think that people just don't give them a lot of credit, and I think they're gonna make some more waves this year because they have that bond and that belief in each other and that love for each other to sacrifice a little bit more than maybe a team that is kind of just throwing guys in and trading and signing free agents. So I'm excited to see what the Caps do this year. But like you said, Florida's they know how to win. They've been there. They've done it multiple times. They have their core back. They have great goaltending. So someone's going to have to take it from them. They're not going to just give it up.
Well, and you mentioned Connor McDavid of the Edmonton Oilers, and they've come obviously so close the last couple seasons. Is that maybe akin to what your Capitals did in finally shedding those near wins and getting that victory? The window's only there for so long, right, TJ? I mean, for even as good as Connor McDavid is as Draisaitl and the rest of them, you got to win at some point, correct?
You do. I mean, you know, I watch I'm kind of a rah-rah, like, sports movie guy, you know? And so, yeah. I mean, I've watched The Last Dance however many times, and I'm not, you know, comparing McDavid to Michael Jordan, but he almost got to that point, too, where you need to bring in the right guys around him, the right system around him to turn into maybe not just the top goal scorer in the league or not the top point getter, but the top winning team. And I think that's probably kind of where they're at. I watched the finals pretty closely, and you know, the guys around him, he needs a little bit of help and maybe take a little bit of the pressure off himself and have some other heroes, you know, on a night to night basis. I look back at our team, Devontae Smith-Pelly, unbelievable. I mean, Stanley Cup run, but finals especially, right? I think I said it in game five of the, I was on ESPN for the Eastern Conference final or the Western Conference finals. And I was at the end, I was like, they need someone to be the hero. It doesn't have to be the big dog every night. Ovi didn't have, he was a hero a lot of nights, but when we won, but he didn't have to be the hero every night because Lars Eller was there. Brad Connolly, Devontae Smith-Pelly, I was pitching in. Guys were pitching in from all over the place. And I think Connor's going to need that in playoffs. You can't look to him and Draisaitl to create all the offense.
You more than pitched in, by the way. Final question for TJ Oshie. And TJ, it's a question I ask at the end of the podcast here in Musings on Golf, and it has to do with a sort of a magical foursome, if you will. If you could have three other individuals and kind of play a magical foursome, and whether those individuals are still with us or they've passed on, who would those three be? I have a feeling one of them would be your dad. Well, who would those three be, and where would you play that round of golf?
Yeah. So I can name them right off the top of my head. It would be Michael Jordan, Wayne Gretzky, and Coach Osh.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember we used to watch the Michael Jordan like VCR tapes growing up. I was like somewhat of like a basketball player, hockey player, split 50-50 growing up. And so it wasn't until I got to like my 10th grade year that I really was like, all right, I'm going to start focusing on hockey. It was like, I just played whatever sport was in that season. So, and where we would play, I mean, it would be the master at Augusta. So the two goats of basketball and hockey and Coach Osh right there with me, it would be, that would be a magical, amazing foursome.
What do you think your dad would ask those two legends over a round of golf? How would he pick their brain, and how would he get along with them?
Oh, he would have them rolling down, laughing down the fairways. My dad played like community college basketball. I think he was in the Hall of Fame out in Everett, Washington. But he was a guy that just, he demanded like the limelight of the room. And so even with Grant Smith Jordan there, he would like, he's the guy that, like, you don't give him the microphone because no one else is going to touch it. And he's like one of those guys that has jokes about, I used to call him on our rookie parties at dinner because guys would be like, hey, Osh, call coach. We need some jokes. And I would call him, put him on speakerphone, and he would tell jokes from my phone to the guys at rookie party at light. You know, the Morton Steakhouse or wherever we were in the back room. So he would, I don't even know if he would ask him a question. I think he would just start telling jokes and he would have them rolling down the slope fairways of Augusta.
How special that would be. That's awesome. TJ, this has been so much fun. Thank you for your time. Thanks for the great years with the Capitals, and best of luck moving forward with the broadcasting career. Something tells me that, that you're going to have some success behind the mic for number of years to come.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thanks for having me.
Golf fans, are you ready to wear your pride? William and Harry's limited edition Spirit Shoe is here just in time to celebrate the Ryder Cup and to help you feel like you're part of Team USA, cheering on every shot. Two bold designs, premium deerskin, spikeless traction, 100% waterproof, and all-day comfort from tee to green and beyond. Limited production. When they're gone, they're gone. Rebuy now at WilliamAndHarry.com. get into spirit, get into comfort. We thank TJ Oshie very, very much for his time, for his thoughts about the games he loves, hockey and golf. And when we did that interview a couple of weeks ago, as I asked TJ, he had been given an opportunity to do some work for the Washington Capitals in their local broadcast group. And since then, he is now doing analysis work. He's an analyst for ESPN. He'll be really good because he's very comfortable in talking and communicating the game. I'm absolutely sure TJ Oshie will have a successful career as an analyst for covering NHL games for a long, long time. Hot off the presses, the Skins game is back. A 16-year hiatus of the silly season event that started in 1983 out in the desert in Arizona with Jack Nicklaus, Arnold Palmer, Tom Watson, and Gary Player. Teamed up in Scottsdale and carryovers when they tied certain holes and money adding up at the end. Well, the 2025 version is going to take place also on that Friday after Thanksgiving. It's coming up this November 28th, Black Friday, and it will feature four Ryder Cuppers: Justin Thomas, Xander Schauffele, Keegan Bradley, and Tommy Fleetwood. Made for TV, made for fun. I think it's going to be great. It's going to be played at Panther National, which is a golf course. It's the newest golf course to open in Palm Beach County in 20 years, designed by Justin Thomas. He had some consultation with Jack Nicklaus on the design. It's a good marketing piece for Panther National. Everything I've heard about Panther National, the golf course, is really good. I live pretty close to it. They've really had a hard time selling homes. And that's what this is all about. This is a marketing effort to get the Skins game back on that property. It's going to be teeing off on Amazon Prime Video, 9 a.m. It's part of a quadruple set of sporting events. There's an NFL game in there, the Bears and the Eagles that will follow, and then some NBA action. But this will be a lot of fun. There'll be a lot of money on the line. They've got a few different twists to the format. So if you needed another reason not to do your Black Friday shopping, you got it. Sit back, JT, Xander, Keegan, Tommy Fleetwood coming into your sofa. Chill out. Maybe do some shopping later in the day. Maybe not, because there's football as soon as the golf is over. Should be a lot of fun with those personalities. Man, as I mentioned going in, Bob McIntyre wasted very little time. It took him all of the next event after the Ryder Cup to win the Dunhill Links, which is played over three courses in Scotland. And this just gets to show you how strong and how deep the European team is and the European players are. McIntyre was good in the Ryder Cup at Bethpage Black, but he wasn't the essential guy to victory. But this is his second win in his home country. He won the Scottish Open in 2024, his second win in 2 years in his home country. And he's a major force in the game. I can't begin to tell you how many golf professionals, PGA of America members, I have heard from, I have seen on social media in regards to the embarrassment. Continues to be the word about what took place on that Saturday afternoon at Bethpage with the things that were said to Rory McIlroy, et cetera. The PGA of America did a lousy job. And it's just, look, the Ryder Cup, however you might want to view it, this is a major, major international sporting event. And you have to have all your T's crossed and I's dotted going into it. And that means security. That means every element. The PGA of America came up way short. Don Ray, who we've had on this show before and is a good man and is very passionate about PGA of America golf professionals. And that's great. Don Ray, to take 4 days after the Ryder Cup was over to issue an apology for what happened is 4 days too late. And this was such a bad look for the PGA of America. The PGA of America runs the PGA Championship. It runs the Ryder Cup. The PGA Tour is the weekend and week out events. The initials may be the same, but they're two very different organizations. The PGA Tour also runs the President's Cup, which is played in those years when the Ryder Cup isn't played. And there's even been talk, should the PGA of America sell the Ryder Cup and reap all the benefits, sell it to the PGA Tour and have them run it? I don't anticipate that will ever come to that point. But for the way that the PGA of America's governance is structured right now, and for Derek Sprague, who is new as the, is a past president of the PGA of America and is new as the CEO of the PGA of America, they've got a lot of work to do to overcome what was a really bad, bad look. And they've got a lot of healing that has to be done. And one of the things that's out there is, who's going to be the captain of this team? You know, who's going to be the captain in 2027? Is there a Luke Donald? Is there a Paul McGinley on the U.S. side that would be committed to it? Is there a system in place? I don't know. The answer to that right now is no. The obvious answer to that, if his way of thinking were different, is Tiger Woods. But Tiger Woods has always been about Tiger Woods. He's always been about the individual achievements in his career. And that's great. But when it comes to the Ryder Cup, he's had a lousy record. Yes, he did captain and play on a winning President's Cup team. But he hemmed and hawed and strung the PGA of America along and finally said, nope, I can't do Bethpage, can't do it. And therefore, they reached out to Keegan Bradley and made a highly unorthodox pick. I don't think Tiger Woods would want to go to Ireland, to go overseas, where the U.S. hasn't won since 1993. U.S. hasn't won the Ryder Cup in foreign countries since 1993. Europe's won it in the United States five times since 1987. So maybe Tiger Woods would be your captain when it comes back to Hazeltine outside of Minneapolis in 2029. But in terms of having any kind of long-range plan, the PGA's got to really either go back to this task force and go back to some of their original thinking. I've even had a good buddy of mine recommend that Theo Epstein, who led the Boston Red Sox to a World Series title as their general manager, and then led the Chicago Cubs to a World Series title as their GM, ending two of the longest droughts in sports, that a guy like Theo Epstein, who's a real builder, a leader, a manager, if you will, why not bring in somebody like that who's, you know, not necessarily a golfer, but somebody who understands how to build a team and how to be successful and how to do all the little things. So we'll see. There's a lot that the PGA of America has to work through. And they've got to get it done, I think, fairly quickly. If I was Keegan Bradley, I'll close with this. If I was Keegan Bradley, I wouldn't want that job again. I think it's a losing job. And if I'm Keegan Bradley at his age, I would say to the PGA, look, let's revisit this captaincy thing again, maybe 4 or 5 years down the road. I'm still playing well. I want to make the team as a player, not get caught up in the politics of should I pick myself or not. So a lot to be done on the PGA. Meanwhile, Bob McIntyre goes out and wins and shows that the Europeans have their house pretty well in order right now. Again, enjoy TJ Oshie. So happy to have him. Next week, we'll be joined by Jake Elsing, former PGA Tour player who has his own show in St. Louis. And Jay's out with a new book. And we've already done the interview. And Jay's very entertaining. You're going to enjoy that very, very much. Again, for Janice Self, Kelly Elbin signing off. Enjoy the rest of the week. Get some NHL hockey. And thanks again for joining us on Musings on Golf.